Welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday, the actuality news show, offering unique insights and in-depth analysis featuring South Africa's top business leaders, newsmakers, and analysts for today's professionals. Your host, Jeremy Mads.
Hello and welcome to MoneyWeb at Midday. I'm Jeremy Mags with 30 minutes on South African and global news. We are live and then up as a podcast. Interviews with key business and political figures, prominent newsmakers and leading experts, all in a concise and informative update. It's Monday, the 1st of July, coming up on the program, a new week and a government of national unity. Now the real work starts. I will talk to one of the key negotiators. I'll ask the question, is the cabinet too bloated? And how is organized business reacting? And can the Proteas build on the momentum of the T20 final? We might have lost, but the squad has new impetus. Well, on a cold winter June night and an hour late, we finally, after weeks of waiting and negotiation, got the composition of the Government of National Unity. And this is what the President said last night.
The incoming government will prioritize rapid, inclusive and sustainable economic growth and the creation of a more just society by tackling poverty and inequality, as well as unemployment. The establishment of the Government of National Unity in its current form is unprecedented in the history of our democracy.
One of the key players in this entire process has been Helen Ziller, chairperson of the Federal Council of the Democratic Alliance, and joins me on the program now. Helen, a very warm welcome. This is a seminal moment in South African politics. Maybe let's start with an overall perspective. What is your sense of what this means for South Africa?
Well, indeed, it means a great deal. The DA gets to be in national government for the first time, and it's been a long time coming since we won Cape Town on that very threadbare coalition in 2006. So we've moved from a party of local government to a party of provincial government, and now we're in national government. So it's very big for us, but also very big for South Africa. What this means is that we have avoided a far-left populist government with economic policies that would have ruined the country. We have got a centrist government and we can build on that. And so I think things look a whole lot rosier for South Africa than one might have been expected to believe before the election.
All of this went right down to the wire from what I can discern. What was your council discussing late yesterday afternoon? How close was all of this to conclusion? How difficult was it to achieve a final concordance?
Well, it was very difficult. It went down to the wire, as it always does. I mean, getting the statement of intent over the line was an all-night job, and then right down to the wire, literally, after the Chief Justice had called for nominations for Speaker already. This wasn't quite as close, but almost. And it was shoved along quite a bit by the EFF's last-minute attempt to gain entry through the back door, because suddenly I think they felt a bit left out.
Is your party happy with the cabinet portfolios that it has?
They are serious portfolios, there's no question about that. An enormous challenge and an enormous amount of work that has to go into them to try and fix things. I mean, Home Affairs has been a disaster in the making for 30 years. And basic education just stubbornly refuses to enable our children to read, write, and calculate at the correct level. Now, basic education is a very difficult portfolio at national level because all the power for education primarily lies in the provinces. So it is going to be an enormous challenge, that portfolio. Communications and digital technology, a lot you can do with that, central to driving economic growth. Forestry, fisheries, and the environment, also crucial for economic growth. And agriculture, well, it's created the most jobs in the Western Cape alongside tourism, so it's an important economic driver.
But you did want portfolios like trade and industry. You also wanted 11 portfolios. You got 6. There must be a tinge of disappointment.
Well, we never wanted 11. If you read the letter that I wrote carefully, I said these 11 are the ones that we would prioritize, and obviously giving the president some idea of the kind of portfolios we were interested in. For some reason, there was a complete misinterpretation of that by saying we were demanding all of these portfolios. Never once in the letter that I wrote did we say we were demanding all these portfolios. We were saying these are the kinds of things we would be interested in. But, you know, if you've got a cabinet of 34 members and we effectively, with the ANC, we'd make up one third, they'd make up two thirds of the government of national unity, then 11 wouldn't be a stretch. It would be perfectly in line with the proportionality principle.
One of the criticisms is the cabinet and the composition of deputies is simply too bloated in order to accommodate as many people as possible. What do you say to that?
I think that's a fair criticism. We weren't expecting anything like a cabinet that size. We were working on about 27, 28. We thought that the president would reduce the size of his cabinet. As it turned out, he didn't. But on 27, I think we would have been fair to have requested 8 positions. We got 6, certainly double the number that they originally offered us, which was 3.
Are you concerned, is the party concerned, Helen Ziller, about the ANC as this government of national unity starts to build, that it's not going to respect that original statement of intent that you referred to?
Look, you know, that's a tough question for me because I was centrally involved in negotiating that statement of intent, and I must say it was honoured more in the breach than in the observance, which was a huge problem, I'll be quite frank.
So how are you going to make sure that they adhere to it?
Well, all we can use is our muscle from inside, and it's very difficult to exercise much leverage without demanding that you're going to walk away, which is not the kind of ethos on which to build a functional government. So I just do believe that we need to keep pushing around the fact that a signed document is a commitment. And we have to get the ANC honoring its commitments, and we have to keep on plugging away at this. But, you know, it would help if all the people who put pressure on the DA during this process also put a little bit of pressure on the ANC. It seems that people continually make excuses for the ANC as to why they can't meet their obligations, as to why they can't fulfill their commitments, as to why we mustn't put too much pressure on them, as if it's our responsibility to solve Cyril's problems. Of course, it isn't. And we'd like a little bit of the pressure to go the other way.
The party in the early stages, Helen Ziller, was criticized for also wanting the appointment of directors general in the portfolios that you were going to manage. Would you clarify that for me? And going forward, is that still going to be a problem?
Well, the position was that we're going into government to share power, not to just try and run the ANC's government perhaps a little better than they would have. That's not the purpose. Now, there is going to be a policy lekgotla coming up in which we will have to hammer out a lot of policy issues between us, but it's going to be very, very difficult to be a DA minister if your entire department is run by an ANC deployee with a whole range of other deployees under him or her. So it's not going to be easy, and a lot of these things still have to be hammered out at the policy lekgotla. I am in the party now, I'm not in the state, and our ministers who are in the state will have to work that out.
Well, let me pick you up on that if I can. You've spent a lifetime in politics. You've helped take this over the line. The Democratic Alliance, as you mentioned at the start of our conversation, now has national influence. There must be part of you that is sad that you won't be sitting around that cabinet table.
I've sat around it before as Premier, and then I sat around it as the extended cabinet, not the central cabinet. But frankly, I'm not sad at all. I'm enjoying the job I'm doing now, and I'm a little bit relieved, to be quite honest, that I'm not going to have that absolutely enormous, overwhelming responsibility that would keep me working 18 hours a day as I did before. I'm really loving it now, only working 10 hours a day, and that is very helpful to me.
And I presume you're sending John Steenhuisen an alarm clock so he can wake up and talk to the farmers.
Well, I'm sure he's going to know when his day starts at 4 o'clock now so that he can talk to the farmers. Yeah, that is going to be a very different kind of day.
All right, Helen Ziller, thank you very much indeed.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right, commentator Sanusha Naidu is with the Institute for Global Dialogue, and she's been listening into that conversation. Sanusha, before we talk about the composition of the Government of National Unity itself, what did you make of Helen Ziller's comments to me?
I think she's actually made a very interesting, I wouldn't say distinction, but she's drawing a line in the sand between the DA in government and the DA as a political party in parliament. And of course, how that will play out will be very interesting to watch as that context emerges. And in terms of the fact that their role in government is not necessarily to save the ANC or to basically do things that the ANC could not do, but rather to dig their heels in and be the kind of ministers in the different portfolios to carry out their mandate. So you're kind of getting a sense that they still that the impression one gets is that there's still that sense that, you know, we're in government. Yes, we're part of the GNU. We have essentially been negotiating these six portfolios and so forth and the DMs. But this doesn't mean that we are going to be subsumed into the DNU and subsumed into a kind of space where it's only going to be about, you know, the accountability of us and not the accountability of the ANC.
But it is real thin edge of the wedge kind of stuff, because it's going to have to change. This is the party, its mindset, its tonality, its philosophy, because it is as much part of the problem as the solution now. Much more difficult to be there than just on the other side in the benches criticizing.
Absolutely. And it's also a different kind of engagement. It's one that you have to find that managerial fit with. You've got to find your style, your governance. It can't be. And I can see for the way in which this first the way in which the cabinet will start to evolve in its everyday operations, and it's getting down to the kind of implementation and the policy issues and the implementation of those policies. I can see a lot of loud voices in that GNU. I can see a lot of pushing and shoving, metaphorically, disagreements. And so that's going to be kind of how do you manage that space? Because it's no longer just the government of the ANC and they have actually created the crisis. You are now part of this government. And so you will have to be accountable, not just in terms of the structures with regard to the cabinet and the parliament, but also in terms of the fact that you got less than 2 years, or just about 2 years, when we have the next election, which is in 2026, the local government election. So when you go to campaign next year, it will be in the year of the elections, it's going to be very interesting when you look at the tone, because you will talk about what has been achieved at the local government level. But remember, these are not separated in terms of the impact from the national to the local government.
That pushing and shoving that you talk about, that's not a bad thing in terms of outcome, though, surely?
It's not bad, but as long as you have a level of rationality and a level of maturity and trust, I think that's the other thing that is important in this GNU, is what level of trust. I mean, you are going to be entering the six new members of the Democratic Alliance are going into portfolios where the bureaucracy could actually be a disruptor to them. You have to basically find the fit as well in terms of how do you come into those ministerial positions as not necessarily trying to impose, but trying to actually work together. And these are all the kinds of dynamics that will play an undercurrent to this GNU. So it's not a bad thing, but you have to also remember that it cannot lead to a collapse of decision making, or it cannot lead to a stalemate where you can't find a way out.
How would you describe the trust levels at the moment?
I think for now, it's still very much at that very, very cursory level, that they are in a GNU, they're in a cabinet. And of course, their first order of business will be when they meet before the president's State of Parliament address. So I think that's going to be kind of more collegial. in a way that they together. But I think once you start getting into the nitty-gritty of what your portfolio entails in terms of your responsibilities as the minister, working with your DGs and the other levels of the public servants and the bureaucracy, the frustrations will become quite important. And I don't think that we will be kind of insulated from some kinds of questions raised about, well, look at here, this is the bureaucracy we inherited, and this is why we can't get things done. So that level of trust will still be kind of very fragile.
I mean, another example of that is the DA and the PAC, for instance, managing agriculture and land reform, giving contrasting views on land policies. I mean, that potentially is a recipe for disaster.
I mean, that's going to be an interesting kind of interministerial cooperation, because one is on agriculture and the other one is on land reform and rural development. And those are not necessarily separate portfolios. They're not necessarily silos that need to work independently of each other. They're not mutually exclusive. And I think it's going to be, I mean, you've got the minister of that portfolio of land reform from the PAC, which has very clear ideological views around how land should be redistributed and what does the question of land reform mean. And of course you've got the DA on the agricultural side, which will take a very kind of pro-market approach and look at the way in which the question of agricultural development and agriculture linked back to farmers will have to be about fueling and bringing about agricultural development around the question of production. Now, how that plays out, I think that's a watching brief for all of us.
Sanusha Naidu, thank you very much indeed from the Institute for Global Dialogue.
MoneyWeb at midday for all your up-to-date stories.
So how is business going to be feeling about all of this today? The Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa, Cas Gouvadia, a very warm welcome to you. And let me start with the same question. What's your overall assessment of last night's announcement?
Hi, Jeremy. Thanks for having me, and hi to your listeners. Look, it was a difficult situation to start with, and so a lot of people had to be accommodated. The parties needed to be accommodated. But if one looks at it overall, I think that the president's done a reasonable job. We're quite happy with the finance and other economic categories, so Enoch Godongwana coming back into finance, we're quite happy with. I think Parks Tau at DTIC is a good appointment, and we have no doubt we'll be able to work with him. I think we're happy that the Minister Ramakgopa remained at electricity, and electricity has been made a ministry on its own outside of the presidency. So there's been some good appointments. I think that there will be challenges. I think that water and sanitation has people that have had no experience in this, and water is a crisis currently, and we need to deal with that very, very urgently, but we'll meet and see what we can do. So generally, I think not a bad cabinet. There are areas of concern, but, you know, we've said right from the beginning that president needs to marshal his cabinet. And we've said right from the beginning that the mantra has got to be an environment for investment on the back of which we put our country onto an inclusive growth path. And business is happy to work with the cabinet, with government, if that's a mantra. And I think an important thing here will be for the president to show decisive and clear leadership, to keep his cabinet behind him and to keep his cabinet focused on what this country needs.
And leading on from that, Business Unity South Africa surely would have some concern over the representation of multiple political parties in the cabinet, in other words, the GNU, and how this might influence consistency and predictability when it comes to policy, particularly as far as business is concerned.
Yeah, absolutely. But that's what we've got to manage. I mean, that's the situation we are in. It is a government of national unity. it does have different political parties, it does have different views and policies in that. And I think that, you know, immediately after the election, I think the DA and the ANC conducted themselves fairly admirably, the ANC in accepting the results, in conceding that they've lost votes, and both parties, at least for some time, putting party political interests aside and looking at how they reach agreement on this cabinet. And we would urge that that's what needs to continue. And certainly, you know, where we see policy positions that are, in our view, not conducive to actually attracting investment and growing the economy, we will address those robustly with the relevant minister and the relevant department.
What would be your specific concern, Kaskavadia, in that respect? Which policies up front would you, could you red flag for me?
Well, NHI being one. We've been talking a great deal about that. Minister Motsoaledi was in health before. He's back. Minister, Deputy Minister Pahla is still there. And we would want to engage robustly on NHI and try to convince the ministers to make the necessary amendments to make NHI work as we believe it can work, but with the necessary amendments. I think generally we'd also want to maintain the sort of course we've maintained in Treasury, the good management of public finances, of the fiscus and so on, and we believe that Minister Gurungwana is the right person, but if they, you know, if any of his deputy ministers push in different directions, then we'd have to actually manage that and work with that. Also at DTIC, we believe that, you know, we now have the opportunity with Minister Tao to really look at trade and investment in the country and create that environment for trade and investment. I think he's done very well as deputy minister in local government. He's worked with business. He's worked with the National Business Initiative. We've cooperated well together. And if we can continue doing that and actually understanding that DTIC's role is to promote trade and promote investment, and therefore business needs to be a critical partner, I think that will hold us in good stead. As I said, water we are a bit worried about because these are unknown entities. And water is a crisis, and that is a worry. But we'll meet with the minister and deputy minister and see what the position is, and then work with them. We have a good director general there, and we'll work with him.
On an operational level, there are two issues which would be of concern. One is general trust around the cabinet table. Yeah. And then, as my previous guest was pointing out, the potential for bureaucracy to hobble the work of parties that are not that are not the ANC.
Yeah. And this is where, Jeremy, I say the president has to play a critical role. I think that, where there is, you know, political parties are fighting and they are putting party political interests first and it's having a negative impact on delivery and on how we need to position this country, president needs to intervene and the president needs to bring them into line and make a call on exactly what we should be doing in those sorts of circumstances. So again, and I think that we all, you know, we are where we are. I still believe that this was the best alternative given the election outcomes. And I think that we all need to put our shoulders to the wheel and make this thing work. I think that we all need to appreciate it's a very complex situation. It's a very difficult situation. But the mindset has got to be, how do we make it work? How do we move forward on this? And how do we together deal with the sort of differences that will come up, trust issues that will come up, but have a positive mindset towards it all?
Kaskavadia is the Chief Executive Officer of Business Unity South Africa.
You're listening to MoneyWeb at Midday.
Now, South Africa, as you well know, suffering a 7-run loss to India in the final of the T20 World Cup on Saturday. It really was heartbreaking, but a real show of guts and determination. More now from News 24 sports writer Khanyiso Chwaku. And Khanyiso, first of all, your overall assessment of the match, how did you see it?
Look, we got beaten. We being South Africa, we got beaten on cricket merits. There is no ground to say that South Africa choked. Yes, a person will look at the fact that South Africa needed 30 of 30, but sometimes sports brings out immovable objects like a Jasprit Bumrah. And one of the big arguments that we had was impact. One needs to look at his overall tournament contribution. And the key part was his economy rate. Bumrah's economy rate across the tournament was 4.50. In the game, he dropped to 4.17. So he simply just was in a position to constrict South Africa and take key wickets. So India also went into the game on the back of very difficult playoff history. If you look back over the past 10 years, they'd lost every conceivable ICC final, whether it be the Test Championship, the Champions Trophy, the T20 World Cup, the World Cup. So at the end of the day, at some point, Lady Luck needed to smile on them. There's also the debate of Surya Kumar Yadav's catch, whether the boundary was brought in, whether part of his foot touched the boundary matting. At the end of the day, to win a tournament, you need those slivers of luck. And South Africa used up a fair bit of luck in the tournament. One felt that at some point it may turn against them. It was just painful to turn at that particular moment.
I'm glad you used that word choker. Do you think after this performance, not only in the final, but in the tournament itself, we can finally say we've thrown that description away?
If you look back at South Africa's playoff performances in the past 10 years, can you say they've choked? They haven't. You look back when they lost to India in Mirpur in 2014, which was the last time they reached a T20 World Cup semifinal, they didn't choke. The toss was crucial in that game because the team that batted second had the better conditions because of the pitch easing out, the dew, because India in that particular tournament lost in the final having batted first. You look back at the Auckland ODI, the semifinal, that epic match against New Zealand. It was just an ability to make pressure decisions, dropping catches, fielding lapses, which are part of the game. I mean, at every level, kids from the age of 9 right through to senior club cricket, people make fielding errors. And that's what transpired in that game. You look back to last year's semi-final against Australia. Did South Africa choke? They didn't. Again, they could have made a better choice in terms of actually bowling first instead of batting first. But at no point South Africa choked in the past 10 years. You could say against the Netherlands where they needed to win and they didn't. In Adelaide, where you could say that it was choke based on the fact that they lost to an unfancy team. But if you look back at how the Netherlands have come along, especially in short-form cricket, those defeats now are no longer termed as upsets, because if there's any format where a small team can and will upset a big team, is in T20 cricket.
Fundamentally, then, what do you think has changed in the Proteas setup?
You wouldn't say much, but I think the key part is that South African cricket is slowly moving away from the notion of how they want to win and basing it more on just getting the job done. I think if you look at tournament sports around the world, it's not the teams who play the prettiest brand of sport that wins. It's the teams that just need to just get the job done and adapt to whatever challenges that they meet in a particular sector. I mean, if you look at AFCON, was such a wonderful example of that, where if you look at footballing merit in particular, there's no footballing merit that could justify Ivory Coast being African champions. But because they were able to, one, absorb the pressure of being host team after that terrible loss to Equatorial Guinea, one, they played what was in front of them, they adapted to the needs of the particular moment. And I think that is what tournament sports is now becoming, where the team that pretty much looks the money, I mean, you look at Ireland, for example, Ireland for all money look to be the team to win the World Cup. Last year, South Africa and New Zealand had lost to Ireland over the past 2 years. But you'd find that South Africa and New Zealand were the two teams who were able to adapt to whatever challenge that was thrown at them in the playoffs and were the deserved finalists. So I think what has become very clear, and it's growing across now, across all sporting codes, is that teams are putting structures in place in the intervening years to ensure that they are able to cover every base come tournament years. And if it requires that they need to have a back-to-basics approach to win matches and tournaments, then so be it.
Are you confident then, and this is a final one, that we can build quickly on the success of having reached the final?
Definitely, because I think the key part with ICC tournaments is that they happen every 2 years. So there is an opportunity to, one, wash off the disappointment. Two, because remember that the next T20 World Cup is in February, March 2026 in Sri Lanka and India, which makes it now, this one was in June. So remember that next year there's a Champions Trophy, February, March, that's being held in Pakistan. So there isn't enough time to settle. The only real title that one can settle on is that of being World Cup champions, where you know that the World Cup happens every 4 years. But I think now the difference lies that in the T20 World Cup, you've got another one in 2 years. There's another IC trophy. So the focus paradigm shifts because South Africa now still have to focus on a test series. And then a lot of their work now for the next 2 years, for the next year or so in particular, will then have to focus on the ODI side, because the 50 over World Cup is coming here in 2027. So you may find that a lot of attention may shift from the T20 team to the 50 over side, because a team now needs to be built for South Africa to be competitive to a point where they can contest for a playoff spot come the 2027 World Cup. So it's going to be interesting to see how the priorities now shift. Do they keep this core, build it through to the World Cup for the next T20 World Cup, or now split attention knowing that there's a core that needs to be built for the World Cup in 2027, while also making sure that attention is paid to the shorter format side, which definitely has the ability to win a tournament.
Well, whichever way you look at it, it was a nail-biting weekend. Kaniso Chwaku, thank you very much indeed. Sports writer for News 24, I appreciate it. And before we go, on our last online poll, we spoke of talk of a single coalition political party. I asked if it could work, not a chance, or let's get a cabinet first. And that was the majority of our respondents. In fact, 60% of people saying, let's sort that out before we start talking about a single coalition party. More politics today. The new government of national unity. Do you think it'll work? Do you think it'll struggle? Or I'll wait and see. If you have a view on that, please participate either on our X or LinkedIn pages. That's our program for today. MoneyWeb at midday. We are live at noon weekdays. We are then up as a podcast. Thank you for listening and goodbye.
Listen to the daily live stream of MoneyWeb at midday, or download episodes on moneyweb.co.za, the MoneyWeb app, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. Or follow MoneyWeb News on social media for more updates. MoneyWeb, your trusted source for business and investment insights.